This is Audible.
Trickery, Curse of the Gods, Book 1. Written by Jamin Eve and Jane Washington. Narrated by Vanessa Moyen. Chapter 1. Some things in life were a given. It was a given that the souls were the bridge between the dwellers and the gods. It was a given that some of them would become gods after they died, while the rest of us would only become ash. It was a given that they would always be more important, and that the dwellers would remain their slaves until there were no dwellers left, and the souls had taken over everything. It was also a given that I'd never be picked to go to Blesswood Academy, because I never got picked for anything. I was still going to go to the selection ceremony, though, to support Emmy. She would get picked. She was smart like that, and lucky like that, and people loved the hell out of her. They didn't love the hell out of me. They ran the hell away from me. It wasn't like I was a bad person or anything. I just had a lot of accidents. I didn't mean accidents like I ate glue, then peed myself on a regular basis. I just tripped more than usual, and accidentally set things on fire more than what would be considered normal. I got kicked out of the village school only one moon cycle before graduation for accidentally making one of the teachers bald. How do you accidentally make someone bald? That's a good question. All you really need is a bucket of warm tar to accidentally toss under the back of their head. How do you get a bucket of warm tar? You don't go looking for it or anything. Or at least I didn't. It was just sitting on the road outside the school, and I thought I should carry it inside and ask what it was. None of us had any experience with tar. All of our roads were dirt, but the leader of our village was always trying to make us famous, and he had all these random engineering books to give him ideas. Books that he probably stole from somewhere. As if the gods gave a shit about whether our roads were gravel or dirt. We had no souls in our village, and we were so far from the center ring, the center of our society. So the gods wouldn't even notice if we painted our roads purple and started walking around naked. Anyway, back to the tar. Apparently, when your hair gets covered in tar, the only way to get rid of it is to shave your entire head. And that's how I made my teacher bald. The whole making a teacher bald incident was pretty much the reason that nobody was expecting me to go to the selection ceremony. I was the embarrassment of the village fool, the cursed child that they all secretly wanted to be rid of. But they could all suck it the hell up, because Emmy was my best friend, and I needed to be there when they announced that she would be chosen. Mostly, I just wanted to see Casey's face when she wasn't chosen. But that wasn't even halfway as noble a motivation as cheering on Emmy. Casey might still be chosen. Each of the outlying villages were allowed to send two of their best dwellers to Blesswood, where they would serve the smartest, bravest, and most powerful souls in the world. Blesswood was Manatsul's most holy city, housing the only academy dedicated to the gods. The gods even came down to Blesswood once a moon cycle to survey the souls, to watch them fight it out in the arena, or outsmart each other in strategy games. Not every soul would get chosen to join the gods, but those that did were always chosen from Blesswood. None of us dwellers really understood how the process worked, but it wasn't our business to understand. The majority of us would never step foot inside of Blesswood. Instead, we would remain in our outlying villages, studying to become teachers, or working in our family trades to keep ourselves afloat. But two insanely talented dwellers would always be chosen to lead a different life. To be different. To enter the world of the souls. Emmy was definitely one of those dwellers. There was no doubt in my mind about it. She was beautiful, intelligent, steadfast, and brave. She once rebuilt the woodsmith's shop overnight, all on her own. There wasn't a thing in the world that she couldn't do. Well, except for becoming a soul, or a god. That was pretty much impossible. Willa! The girl in question had just skidded into the house, her eyes widening at the sight of me, a shriek in the form of my name leaving her mouth. It's nothing, I managed, jumping away from her before she could grab me. You're bleeding, idiot! Since when does bleeding make a person an idiot? We all do it. It's totally natural. She rolled her pretty brown eyes, making another grab for me. I huffed, giving up my hand. I wasn't actually bleeding, but the burn on my hand was all red and angry, so it had probably appeared that I was bleeding at first. She dropped my hand and spun to the stove, tossing a pot of water over the licking flames that I had lit beneath the cooking cupboard. As steam filled the room, she started rummaging around in the drawers of my mother's tiny kitchen. The first three drawers that she opened contained small medical packs made of cloth, but they had all been depleted. Over there. I decided to help her out, jerking my head in the direction of the bed in the corner of the room. It was the only proper bed in our cottage. My mother had bought it when Emmy's parents had died, saying that she could live with us and that the two of us could share it while she slept on the mattress on the floor. It didn't take her long to kick both of us to the floor instead, to the thin stretch of foam that had always been my bed in the past. Emmy found the fourth medical pack tucked beneath the bed and brought it over to me, making quick work of bandaging my hand. "I told you not to use the stove anymore," she chastised, a frown furrowing between her brows. "That's why I cook enough to last for the week, if you keep it properly." "I wasn't cooking, I swear. I would never, not even if you forced me." "Why was the stove hot?" "There was something inside it. I thought if I made it hot, it would crawl out." "With the door shut?"
"Whoops."
She laughed, finishing up with my hand and spinning to face the stove. It was made of stone, a long, bulky structure reminiscent of a fireplace, with an area to light a fire below a stone cupboard with a cast-iron door, which filtered into a chimney. She wrapped her hand in a cloth and popped open the door. That was what I had done wrong, not wrapping my hand before trying to touch the hot metal. Emmy winced and then closed the door again. "Guess we're having rat for dinner." I inspected my hand, totally impressed with her bandaging skills. "Can't I keep you here, Emmy? You're so handy. What am I going to do without you?" "I might not get picked," she reminded me, her voice soft. She was afraid. I didn't know why. Maybe she was afraid of leaving me alone, or maybe she was afraid that she would get picked. Blesswood was a whole other world to us outlying dwellers, a world that we had barely any knowledge of, and absolutely no experience in. A form stumbled in the doorway, and we both turned to watch my mother slump down onto the twin bed with an incoherent mumble. "Mum," I groused, walking over to the bed and shaking her leg. "The selection ceremony is this sun cycle, remember?"
"Just leave her."
Emmy grabbed my hand, pulling me away.
"We're going to be late."
I was pissed. I didn't want my mum to stand Emmy up on her big day, but she'd obviously been at Sion's Tavern all night. Again. I tried not to think about it in certain terms. They were her life choices after all. But I was pretty sure that she was having sex with travelers passing through the tavern to earn enough tokens to keep us all alive. Okay, those were pretty certain terms. That would have been bad enough. But I was also pretty sure that she was drinking away most of the tokens that she earned. She wasn't a very responsible mother. She barely seemed to notice that we were all around. Emmy kept her fed, and I sometimes pulled off her shoes when she stumbled into the house with the dawn. That was the extent of our relationship now. Maybe it would have been different if Emmy hadn't come to live with us. Maybe I would have needed her more, and that would have forced her to act like a mother. Emmy started to drag me out of the house, but we both stopped on our way to the door, looking down at the broken timepiece on the floor. Each of the village households were permitted a single timepiece to share, and I must have accidentally dropped ours after I had burned my hand. The glass cover was shattered, and the two pointers were struggling to move. The longer, thinner pointer, which clicked quickly around the timepiece to measure clicks in time, was just twitching back and forth over the same number. The shorter, thicker pointer, which would rotate to the next number after 60 clicks, indicating a rotation in time, had broken off completely.
"Don't worry about it," Emmy said. "We can deal with it later."
She finally succeeded in dragging me out of the house, and we took off down the road, our backpacks thumping against us with each step. Hers was probably full of books and practical things. Mine had practical things in it, too. But things that would have only been practical for me, specifically. Among those things were a fire blanket, a pocket knife, a general poisons antidote that I'd basically traded my soul for at a traveling circus. And by my soul, I mean every token I had ever saved up. Tokens were the currency of our people, and I'd managed to save up a total of 3. Well, 2.5. Not sure where the other half of the last one was. It kind of looked like someone had taken a bite out of it, but that was both impossible and unhygienic. The tokens were made of bronze metal, and they were always pretty filthy. So, I had traded my precious 2.5 tokens for what was most likely a scam potion. I was almost positive that it wouldn't work, but I'd never come across anything like it before, so it was far too easy for them to convince me that it was the rarest of potions and worth much more than I was paying for it. I also had another medical kit in my backpack, and a banana, just in case I got hungry. "Maybe they'll choose you to go with me," Emmy joked, peeking at me sideways. I huffed, just a little out of breath, because she was so much faster than me. They wouldn't even let me graduate.
They did, though.
Yeah, but only because I broke into the records office and made myself a star pupil.
"I still can't believe you did that," she chuckled. "You graduated above everyone else, almost above me even, and they couldn't do anything about it."
"Nope." I let my lips smack together in satisfaction as I said the word. "Those documents are official. Binding."
"They just didn't want to admit to Leader Graham that you managed to break into their records office and tamper with everything. He would have fired all of them."
"Okay, yeah. That's probably a more likely explanation." We reached the school, which was a collection of stone houses connected by dirt pathways, and wove through the people toward the back field, where everyone was gathering. There was a stage set up, and Leader Graham himself was standing there, a bunch of papers in his hands. I snorted, pointing at him, and Emmy glanced in the direction that I indicated, a smile breaking out across her face. Leader Graham was always trying to look important. He had easily 10 pages of notes in front of him, but he only needed to learn 2 names. He had a whole team of village advisors behind him, but he would only announce 2 names.
"Good evening, dwellers," he began,
just as we took our seats toward the back, peering around the heads in front of us to try to get a better glimpse of him.
"As you all know, we've reached the end of another life cycle, and we'll be sending off 2 of our best to attend the Souls of Blesswood."
He paused, allowing the front row of dwellers to jump out of their seats, cheering excitedly. I recognized most of them as our classmates.
"Emmy,"
I poked her,
"I think we're supposed to be sitting up the front."
She nudged me back, and I slid out of the seat, creeping up the middle aisle with her right behind me as Leader Graham started talking again.
"As you all know, Blesswood was the original birthplace of the first soul family, many hundreds of thousands of life cycles ago. The original family did not work to strengthen themselves for the gods, so they were not chosen to ascend to Topia to be with the gods. The souls of this age know better, and throughout Minatzel, they are even now gathering the best amongst their own people to send to Blesswood, to train for that very purpose, to impress the gods. Just as we are striving to serve the souls are striving to serve the gods. And we must keep in mind that some of those souls may be chosen to join the gods, which means that our dwellers will be attending not only to the most respected souls of our world, but also to the future gods of our world. There is no more noble profession for a dweller in all of Minatzel."
"Except maybe just staying put and probably accidentally burning the village down," I muttered to Emmy over my shoulder. "I think my future profession is more noble." She snickered, but hit my shoulder kind of hard, which wasn't surprising. She didn't like it when I said stuff like that. The boy whose chair I was currently crouched next to shot me a glare, and I shut up, turning my attention back to Leader Graham.
"So,"
he took out his top sheet of paper, clearing his throat.
"Without further ado, the selected dwellers both graduated with perfect marks in all classes, and are even siblings of the same household. May they bring honor to their family, and to this village. Emmanuel and Willa Knight, please come up to the stage."
I froze, the breath rushing out of my chest in a groan. Shit. Shit! I didn't think they would use those records to decide on who to send to Blesswood.
"Willa?"
Emmy muttered from behind me, her voice a squeak.
"You altered my forms too?"
"Just your last name." I was on autopilot, my mind spinning too fast for logical thought. You're my sister. You needed my last name.
Oh, Willa, what have you done?
I didn't get a chance to answer because she was standing, grabbing my arm and pulling me up with her. I tried to crouch down again, but she wouldn't let me, and holy gods, she was strong. She dragged me all the way up to the stage and planted me directly beside Leader Graham, who shook my hand and then her hand before presenting us to the village people. They weren't even clapping. They were sitting there, mouths hanging open, while metaphorical crickets chirped in the background. Leader Graham frowned, having no idea what was going on, because he really didn't get involved with the people he was supposed to be leading, unless it was to force us to do something he wanted. Or on the rare occasion that the Minotaurs, the governing party of the Souls, inspected our village. He grabbed my shoulders and forced me forward a step.
"Would you like to say something?"
he asked me, in a way that didn't really make it a question.
"Thank your teachers, maybe."
"Thanks, teachers," I managed, my voice strangled. His frown deepened, and he turned to Emmy, who stepped up beside me, clearing her throat confidently.
"We will not let this village down," she promised,
her voice strong, carrying over everyone's shock, and stirring them back into motion.
"We will work harder than any other chosen dwellers, and we will return to this village with the blessings of the gods. That is a promise."
It was such a short speech, but Emmy had been the one to deliver it, so it was enough to force a few cheers from the people. The rest were all still staring at me. Leader Graham seemed to give up on us, pointing to the side of the stage to dismiss us, while he rambled on for a little bit longer about a few of the most legendary souls to ever ascend Utopia. Emmy was laughing by the time the people cleared out. I mean, really laughing. She was sitting on the stage, her knees brought up to cradle her face, as she hung her head and veritably lost it. When she looked up, there were tears streaming down her face.
"I can't believe our luck," she told me. "I just can't believe it. This is something I didn't ever dare dream about. We are going to bless Wood, Willa, both of us, together."
She started laughing again, and I started worrying about her sanity. "Are you okay?" I asked, kneeling beside her, my hand on her back. Immediately, she started sobbing. "What the hell?"
"I've been losing it inside my head," she admitted between hiccuping sobs. "Ever since you got kicked out of school, you were so smart, you could have made it, but then it all came crashing down. I thought I'd have to say no if I got chosen."
I felt my own tears welling then. I had to bite them back as I cuddled her into my arms. I stroked her silvery hair, muttering things that weren't really things, like, "You're fine, we're fine, it'll be fine." What I really wanted to say was that I was probably going to die. Literally. I was the least appropriate person to throw into a school of elite souls. If I pissed one of them off enough, they would send me to one of the temples to be sacrificed to the gods. No joke. I was probably going to die.
"We're fine," I repeated.
"This is going to be amazing. A whole new life. Just you wait, Emmy." Within one sun cycle, Emmy and I were standing on the edge of our village, single bag in hand, preparing for our big moment. Preparing to walk from the only home we'd ever known. I was leaving behind a mother who probably wasn't even aware that I'd been chosen. She'd barely been present, or conscious, since our selection. I wasn't sure she understood what had happened. Maybe she didn't even know that Emmy and I were leaving, that we would never return. Blesswood dwellers didn't come back to the outlying villages, despite what Emmy had promised. Nope, they were destined for bigger and better things, like being hogtied and sacrificed to the gods for accidentally tripping and punching the sacred balls of one of the sacred souls. Don't think it couldn't happen, because I was up to 5 cases this life cycle alone. Torture. That was what my future had in store for me. I was going to be tortured. The previous afternoon, after the ceremony, I had told Emmy that I couldn't wait, that it was going to be fantastic, the best ever. Sign me up for 2 lifetimes, and then for an encore. But when the sky grew dark, and there was nobody around to see my false enthusiasm, the terrors grew particularly dark and vivid. Each nightmarish scene depicted one of the millions of ways I might inflict disaster onto the souls, onto Blesswood. I tried to tell myself it would be fine. that the Academy had been coasting along with a perfect reputation for too long anyway, and that a little tarnish would do it some good. Spice things up. As long as they didn't use my blood to try and buff the stain. Crowds swelled around us as we waited by the oldest pear tree for our transport cart to arrive. This huge, gnarled, ancient thing represented the most northern point of our village, where the two dirt roads intersected, one leading to Blesswood in the north, and the other leading to the last vestiges of civilization in Minatzel. Beyond that, nobody really knew. Not a single person had ever traveled any further south than the last village and actually returned, and none of us were any wiser as to what lay in the most mysterious part of Minatzel. More death, I was sure. Or maybe it was paradise, and that was why nobody ever came back. The thing was, that was a pretty big gamble. Death or paradise? Only two villages lay further from Blesswood than ours, and both struggled to grow from the land. Water was scarce, but their leaders had expressed on more than one occasion how grateful they were not to have me, so that was something. Minatzel was set out in a ring-like pattern. The very center was Blesswood. It was there that the most fertile of life was. Each circle that extended out grew worse and worse. We were in the seventh ring, and there were nine in total that we knew of. Beyond that was the South Road, and the gamble of death or paradise. Glancing up, I let the sway of red and green-tinged leaves soothe me. We were in the middle of the hot season, but despite a scarcity of water, this old tree continued to provide shade and shelter. As the folk stories told it, this tree was from the time before. No one liked to talk much of the time before. I'm not sure any of the stories really truly remembered the true beauty of our world. Apparently, all of Minatzel, not just Blesswood, had once resembled Topia, which was said to be the most beautiful of all worlds. Not that any of us knew about the other worlds. We just assumed that they were out there, somewhere. Like Topia. You ready for this, Will? Emmy gripped her bag loosely, her other hand wound tightly through mine. How long do you think it'll take Mum to realize we're gone? I continued to scan the crowd. It was common for the village as a whole to send the Blesswood recruits off, but there was no sign of my dirty blonde, tired-faced, red-eyed matron. Emmy's silver hair slid across her cheek as the slightest of breezes lifted the strands. She looked extra pretty, having taken time and care with her appearance. I had worn my good shirt, and it was even mostly clean, except for a little sooty patch on the back from where I had accidentally sat in the fireplace. Probably around the same time she realizes that her medical kits are full and that my dinners have run out, Emmy replied. Yeah, my mother used those medical kits almost as much as I did, because believe it or not, there was another person out there capable of causing as much chaos as I did. She wasn't born that way, though. Not like me. She got there with the help of alcohol and low morals. Noises swelled in the crowds, and I could see the transport cart moving slowly toward us. Yellow, ochre-colored dirt kicked up beneath the four-spoked wheels. It was believed that within the sacred walls of Blesswood, they had transport systems able to move without the help of Bolson, the huge, black, pointy-headed beasts that now pulled the approaching cart. It wasn't called Blesswood for no reason, you see. The gods gifted them with magic and technology of the caliber that dwellers could only dream of. That must have been where the Book on Tar had come from a place where the reality was far beyond even our brightest sun cycles. Emmy started dragging me to the now waiting transport, her grip on my hand tight with nervous energy. People reached out and touched us as we left. Dwellers were superstitious by nature, and believed that these were the actions which would garner favor with the gods. This was why we served the souls the way we did. I mean, other than the fact that the souls would probably burn our villages to the ground if we didn't. We wanted the gods to reward us, to see our use, to recognize our people. So when any of the dwellers were chosen to serve the souls, the others always made show of their support. They hoped that eventually the dwellers would find themselves recognized as more than just the bottom rung of sentient life in our world. I had never reached out to touch any of the previous dwellers because I assumed differently. I was the bottom feeder of bottom feeders, And if my 18 life cycles had taught me anything, it was that nothing ever changed. Dwellers would always be worthless to the world, and I would always be worthless to the worthless. As if I'd summoned the accident by thought alone, my feet tangled in a rough section of brush by the side of the dirt road, and before Emmy could right my balance, no doubt the reason she'd chosen to utilize her crazy muscle man strength and manhandle me in the first place, the bag shot from my hand and hit the side of the cart. A cart which bore the very regal crest of Blesswood. The mark of the creator, the original god. His mark was a staff, with a spearhead made of silver. Always silver, because silver was the color of the creator. I'd heard once that all the gods were defined by certain colors. But the only part of that particular lesson that had actually stuck with me was the fact that Death's color was black. It just seemed so predictable. Where's the creativity, gods? I don't see why Death couldn't have been pink or purple. What if he likes sparkles? I was distracted from my thoughts as my bag dropped heavily into the dirt beside the cart, billowing up a plume of dust. An actual gasp was let out en masse as the shock of what I'd just done wore off. Come on, people. They couldn't be surprised, right? Did they think that just by being chosen I'd suddenly emulate the grace of a soul? Well, that would have been nice, but I was a pragmatic sort of dweller. The clumsy curse was going nowhere. Although I did take a moment to be grateful that I'd neither killed anyone nor disabled the vehicle in a way that would render it completely useless.
Willa, Emmy hissed.
What the hell is in your bag? I took a closer look at the crest. There was now a dent in it, right in the center, knocking the Pin Street staff a little off kilter. Whoops. Striding a few feet forward, dragging Emmy with me, I snatched my bag up again. I think it was the saucepan, I whispered.
Why is there a saucepan in your bag?
She asked, glaring at the bag in question. Won't we need it to cook with? She slapped a hand over her mouth, but it was too late. I'd caught the start of her laugh. I brandished my bag at her, fully prepared to whack her with it, and the gathered people gasped. Again. Emmy only shook her head at me. How many strikes do you get before they bleed you? I was half-joking as we were forced to turn to the gathered villagers and wave. She blinked a few times, her mouth opening and closing, before she was finally able to say,
It's your own fault, Will. What did I tell you about walking?
That I should leave it to the experts, I mumbled, trying to sound chastised. The stark white of her skin was a little too pronounced, and I knew she feared for me. Even though she was teasing me in the same way that she always had. I wasn't the only one who had been kept up last night by visions of the many ways in which I would almost definitely be tortured. Dwellers might live simple, menial, task-driven lives, but it was reasonably safe in the villages. My curse was barely tolerated here, but there was nothing that could be done to actually get rid of me. Most dwellers figured that one sun cycle soon, I would simply take care of the problem myself, by tripping into one of the spiked pits that bordered the village to protect us from wild animals, or accidentally stumbling into untamed Bolson territory. Been there, done that. Wasn't even that close to dying.
Come on.
Emmy dragged me the last few feet. My bag was now being stored in the back by the guide, though not before he searched it suspiciously. He didn't even open Emmy's. Hardly surprising. One look at Emmy, and it was pretty clear that the most illegal thing she would be capable of smuggling into Blesswood would be a pair of underpants with an accidental rip in them. Not even a deliberate rip. An accidental one. The guide was probably employed by the Blesswood Academy. He would take us across the Seven Rings, a journey which would take many sun cycles, and then he would deliver me to my doom. I examined the cart, worried that it wouldn't be sturdy enough to withstand my bad luck. It was one with a covered, round-top cargo hold. It would be there that we would sleep when night fell. Two Bolson were secured with a multitude of belts, which had been woven from the strongest of vines. Vines which, I knew, only grew in the two rings out from Blesswood. Not much else was able to contain the huge black beasts. I paused to admire them for a moment. Because they could do no harm to me, all trussed up in their leather harnesses. They were relatively hairless, or at least they had really short, shiny coats. Their eyes were usually full of darkness, but I had heard you could occasionally make out the faintest ring of color around the iris. I never had, but that was because I refused to get that close. They had four sets of legs, with knobbly knees and hooved feet. And while they looked somewhat gangly, they were impressively strong and fast. They were also wild and dangerous, but most people chose to ignore that fact by pretending that they had successfully domesticated them.
Greetings, dwellers.
The guide was younger than I'd expected, probably around 30 life cycles old, with a full head of orange hair, a splattering of birth spots across his nose, and light blue eyes.
My name is Jareth. I will be escorting you safely to Blesswood, where you will begin your blessed service to the souls.
A cheer went up from my village. It wasn't the first one.
Crying would be much more appropriate, I side-whispered to Emmy. They could at least fake sadness until we left.
With a shake of her head, she nudged me forward, and both of us climbed up onto the back bench seat. The guide had the front, and he would use the belts to control the cart. From this high vantage, we could see the crowds and the edges of our village. The spot near the water well, where it hidden during the most punishing sun cycles of the heat season, so that the droplets of cool water would splash me as people pulled from the well. The stone buildings, where I'd spent my formative life cycles learning. And the healer's hut, where I'd sent at least five of the teachers who had labored over my formative learning. The tar incident had been the final straw, but there had been so many straws before that. Probably too many straws. Teacher Garrett had actually been more patient than most. The bullsin twisted as more noise erupted from the drunken crowd. They had to be drunk. There was literally no other excuse for grown-ass dwellers to act so freaking happy about us leaving. None. They had definitely moved past their shock over me having been chosen, and were now taking it as a gift from the gods. The bastards. Jareth was now speaking with Leader Graham. I saw the exchange of goods, and probably tokens. Villages earn tokens for their hard work. Something like 1 million tokens got you the grand prize of more dwellers to do more work. Hardly worth the effort if you asked me, but tokens were life around here. I was pretty sure that our leader slept in a bed of the round shiny discs. Jareth climbed back onto the cart, signaling the fact that it was now time to go. Leader Graham stepped to our side.
The seventh ring wishes you a long life of servitude. You have been blessed. You must now do everything in your power to bring pride to your people. Anything you do reflects on us. Your village is rewarded for your hard work.
Right. Give me a moment to wipe my tears. Emmy gave him a genial nod.
We will make our village proud. You can expect many tokens for our service.
So many. Except for all those subtracted away when I accidentally glued one sacred soul's head to another sacred soul's backside. Jareth lifted the belts, and with one last wave, we were moving. I sent a single glance back, silently bidding farewell to my mother. She was a bit of a drunk floozy, but she had always been in my life. I had very few things which were mine. She'd been one of those things. Emmy squeezed my hand, and it was enough for me to turn in my seat and face toward the new future. Everything was about to change now. Whether it was for better or worse, no one but the gods knew. Chapter 2. In the first four sun cycles of the journey, we'd suffered two cracked cartwheels, an escaped bullsin, and three wild animal attacks. Considering my propensity for disaster, I was considering it a roaring success. We were now in the third ring, and it was the first time I could see the difference in the land. The sixth, fifth, and fourth rings had been much like ours, with yellow dirt roads, hard, unforgiving land, stone buildings, and bullsin pens. Sure, their villages might have had a few more trees, extra water wells, and maybe even a pond which could be used for bathing, but for the most part, it was familiar. The third ring, however, was when the world started to change. The roads were paved. The houses had proper glass windows set into decorative mason-worked sills. And the people barely even blinked at the passing transport car, even though it had the symbol of the creator on it. It was something they apparently saw often.
This is Tridel, Emmy whispered to me, even though nobody could hear us over the noisy turning of the wheels against the paved road. The first Soul City, or the last, actually, depending on which way you're coming from. The next is Dividel, Soldel, and then we'll be on to Blesswood. I didn't bother to ask how she knew that. She knew everything, because she clearly stole all the good genes from the rest of us pathetic villagers. I sat up higher in my seat, peering at the faces that were so completely oblivious to us. The souls didn't look any different to us dwellers. Not really. I was staring at a group of them now, as they gathered around a shopfront, waiting in line for something with hempen sacks of produce loaded up into their arms. "They don't look that sacred," I muttered to Emmy. She followed the direction of my gaze, and then she snorted on a laugh. "Those are dwellers, Will. The souls keep slaves even in Tridel." I flushed, a tiny bit embarrassed, and turned the other way, staring out along the other side of the cart. There was a couple walking along the side of the road, close enough for me to examine. The woman was a few inches shorter than the man, her arm hooked through his. Either there were subtle differences in how souls appeared compared to dwellers, or else they were just a particularly attractive couple. Whatever the reason, the sun was shining right on them, highlighting them like a flattering spotlight. I felt my mouth dropping open, just a little bit. Her hair was shiny, her eyes were shiny, her teeth were shiny, her clothes were shiny. Maybe it was just the light, but it put me into a bit of a trance anyway. "Shiny," I drooled, causing Emmy to laugh again. The man must have heard Emmy because he glanced our way, his smile growing for a moment as he nodded in greeting. He knew where we were going. It was pretty obvious. We were dwellers, sitting in a cart bearing the creator's insignia. We were going to Blesswood to serve the future gods. He smiled at me, I tried to tell Emmy, speaking out of the side of my mouth, trying not to make it look like I was talking about him. "I know, dummy," she replied blandly. The cart veered a little then, probably dodging a crack in the pavers, and the wheel hit a puddle, spraying dirty street water all over the shiny couple. "Whoops." I jerked back in my seat, fixing my eyes firmly in front of me, as though I had somehow done it deliberately. The man wasn't smiling anymore. He was now loudly cursing poor Jareth, who either couldn't hear or didn't care. I suspected that Jareth was another dweller, albeit one important enough to serve the souls of Blesswood. Did that give him a certain amount of status? And was the status high enough that he could accidentally spray some souls with street water? Apparently. Things were looking up. "Remember what I told you, Will?" Emmy was watching me. I could feel the weight of her stare. I had no damn idea what she was talking about, but she already knew that. I was supposed to say, "What?" And cue preventative lecture about safety in Blesswood. "Don't sleep with a knife in the bed for safety?" I asked instead, a smirk lifting my mouth. She narrowed her eyes on me, trying to convey that it was serious time. "Not that. Don't make out with Teacher Hardy's son. He probably has a disease because he's always itching his crotch. Not that. Don't leave the curtains open while I'm dancing naked. Don't eat everything that's put in front of me, especially if I was the one who put it in front of me. Don't, well, don't sew all the holes shut while I'm mending shirts, because then where do the arms go? Well, don't drink pond water. Don't believe everything I read. Don't say no to everything. Don't say yes to everything. Don't talk over me while I'm trying to lecture you." My smirk melted into laughter, seeing how red her face had turned, and I settled back into my seat, wiggling around a little bit to get comfortable. "Okay, fine," I eventually said. "Bring it on. Lay it on me. Lecture away. I'm ready. I'm waiting. Let's do this." She was getting frustrated. The smoke coming out of her ears was almost visible. But, to be honest, I was trying to put off the serious talk. I had been since we left the village. Emmy had been preparing for the possibility of eventually ending up in Blesswood, but I hadn't been. I didn't know anything, and I was terrified of what she was going to tell me. "Are you done?" she finally asked, arching a single silver eyebrow. "No, wait." I reached into my pack, pulling out one of the honey sandwiches that she had packed to last the journey. "Okay, go," I allowed, freeing the bread from its canvas wrapping and stuffing as much of it into my mouth as possible. Maybe I was being immature, but it would be easier to turn this into a one-way lecture. Emmy didn't mind. She launched straight into it. "You have no idea what's going to happen when you get there, Will, but the rest of us do. They spent a lot of time going over this in the last moon cycle at school, because two of us were going to get picked. It's important that we're prepared."
"Okay,"
I managed around a mouthful of bread.
Our sun cycles will be split between the classrooms and the dormitories. We'll be given a timetable, just like all the souls, but we don't get to actually attend classes with them. We'll be attending to the classes. Each classroom is assigned 5 dwellers to be at the disposal of the souls and the professors. When academy classes are over, we'll each have an assigned dormitory room, and it'll be our job to service the room and the souls assigned to the room. I don't know when we're going to have time to eat. They never explain that.
What about sleep? I quipped, swallowing what was in my mouth. Will we have time for that? Or the other essentials, like breathing?
Bathing?
No, breathing.
You can multitask, can't you?
I huffed, stuffing the rest of the sandwich into my mouth. Hard ass, I muttered, almost unintelligibly.
What was that? She asked, snatching the rest of the sandwiches out of my lap.
Love you, I amended quickly, causing her to laugh.
Emmy held off on lecturing me any further, even when we passed through Dividel and into Soldel, which was the first ring after Blesswood. This city was different to the other soul settlements. It was actually stepping up into a gradual incline, with several lower tiers of what seemed to be general housing, below several higher tiers of... What the hell was that? It looked like they had taken a bunch of stone houses and stacked them on top of each other. There were buildings like this scattered all around, towering into the sky. How could they do that? How did it stay up so high in the air? Emmy noticed my slack jaw, wide eyes, and metaphorically drooling chin, and quickly leaned over to follow my line of sight.
Wow.
Her voice got all breathy.
I've wanted to see Sky Reachers my entire life. Did you know that hundreds of souls can live in one building? It's ingenious.
All I heard was, did you know that hundreds of souls can all die in one go? Ingenious clearly equaled insane in Emmy talk. No way would I ever step foot into something like that. Temptation for my clumsy curse was exactly what that was.
If souls are so blessed, you know, with all the shininess and the gifts and the chance to kiss ass the gods of Topia, then why do they live all stacked up on top of each other like the Minotaurs are waiting to sort them out properly later? It didn't make sense to me. I had dreamed of living in my own home, surrounded by all my stuff. I'd have medical kits in the exact spot I last left them. You know, the little things. Emmy had her soul-worshipping eyes on, the deep brown color as rich as the soul beneath the roots of the trees that we passed. She clearly loved the Sky Reachers.
They're supposed to be so fancy, Will. Like, fancy. Only the wealthiest of the souls are able to afford a Sky Reacher home. Can you imagine being so much closer to the gods?
Do we know that the gods live in the sky, though? I never really believed Teacher Hardy's theory. He ate sardines for lunch. It's never good to trust a person who eats sardines.
Emmy shrugged.
Maybe they don't, but I doubt they live in the ground, and whenever anyone talks about the gods coming to Blesswood every moon cycle, they say that the gods are coming down.
Okay, but back to the Sky Reachers just real quick. How do they even pee? I mean, a hole in the floor is going to be a real problem for the souls below. Even Jareth chuckled at that one, who had been a tough crowd so far.
They have indoor piping and proper bathrooms, he informed us,
a broad grin strong across his fair cheeks.
They can even bathe inside, and the pipes make sure no one gets a pee shower.
Inside.
Inside? Where did the water come from? Where did it go? Would my mind explode from all the questions currently fighting for dominance? The higher we climbed, the more of the towering buildings surrounded us. Speckled intermittently between them were these huge gated stone buildings. I had no idea why they needed gates. Souls were probably so badass they kept wild bullsin around their dwellings, just for kicks. It seemed that Soldel was coming to its peak. From our current vantage point, we could see right out to the second ring, Dividel. At the junction of this peak was another massive building, and it alone was almost the size of our entire village back home. It wasn't a dark gray stone like most of the other structures, but instead, something white and pretty with sparkling stones embedded into the walls. That was the leader of the buildings, the one which was all, look at me, making every other building in Soldel feel like crap about itself.
Let me guess, that's Soldel's academy.
I pointed toward the show pony. Emmy shook her head.
Nope, good guess, but that's the Minotaur's council chambers and training facility. They recruit souls during their graduation life cycle at the academies. After that, It's another 4 life cycles of training. And then they either become council members dealing with the disputes of the gods and the 9 rings, or else they go into patrols. The patrols walk the streets, respond to distress calls, and keep the peace. It's a very honorable life path, and only the best of the best get to be a Minotaur.
Quick question. I leaned forward, trying to stretch out the ache in my back. It was taking forever to get to Blesswood. How did we become friends? I've spent my life cycles trying not to become the great disaster of this era, and you've spent yours overachieving and learning way too much about the 9 rings. They never specifically taught us this in school, so explain how you know everything.
For most dwellers, there was absolutely no point learning about the inner workings of any rings except the one you lived in. There was no time off to travel. We weren't even allowed to travel without a ton of tokens, 35 permits, special permission, and a sacrifice to the gods, or some crap. We weren't souls. We had no rights, and therefore, no need to learn anything more than the basics. The basics being how to stay the hell out of the way of the souls, unless we were called upon for service.
The information is there if you want it, Emmy told me. I've been preparing for Blesswood my entire life. Did you know Teacher Howard was a former Blesswood recruit?
Teacher Howard? Oh, right. He'd stopped by for one cold season in our 6th school cycle. We'd had a lot of teachers, actually, when I thought about it.
6 stitches and a mild concussion?
I double-checked that I was thinking of the right dweller.
Emmy was trying not to roll her eyes, which was fair, considering I'd summarized an incident that could have occurred with one of at least 3 other teachers.
I continued. He loved yellow pants, wore the same socks over and over, despite the fact that we could smell his feet even out in the snow, told crazy stories, learned the hard way never to take a weaving class with me, or at least learned the hard way never to hand me cutters and belts at the same time. Still, no eye roll. She was practicing super-dweller patience.
Yes, Will, that's him. He did something to annoy an important soul in Blesswood, and as a punishment, he was directed to teach throughout the 9 rings. A position of honor, but one which took him far from the blessed capital that he had been working his whole life to get to. He took a liking to me, said I reminded him of his sister, who now serves one of the most gifted of the soul families. He taught me so much. It's because of him that I worked so hard, studied, and made it my goal to be recruited.
And somehow your clumsy-ass best friend got herself invited along on the journey. Very little work, and at least one almost world-ending disaster per sun cycle, her only claim to fame.
I don't think deliberately altering your records is a somehow thing, Will.
Even as she said it, she was hugging me. Hard.
At 8 life cycles, I didn't love you like I do now.
Her voice was muffled against my shirt.
Nope. At 8, I was determined to go, no matter what. Then you happened, and I knew that one sun cycle I would have to leave you. It broke my heart. Every morning when I woke up, I questioned whether it was worth it. I would start off wanting to turn it down, and then I wouldn't be sure. No matter my doubts, I never stopped trying my hardest to be chosen. It was like I had to prove I could be the best, and then if I turned it down, I'd know it was my choice.
She pulled back to face me.
You getting chosen with me was the best thing that could have ever happened. For once, your clumsy curse was a true gift.
A gift. Those weren't the words which had been used to describe my curse before. Nobody would have dared, even to make me feel better. Only souls had gifts, and my curse was enough of a slap in the face of the people as it was.
Did you ever consider turning it down, Will?
The question from Emmy was a little hesitant, like she had been thinking about it, but was afraid to ask.
I mean, I know things have happened so fast, but did you consider turning it down?
I hadn't. Not even once, actually, which was odd because I was pretty certain I would die there. Although, the certainty of death was something I lived with every day, so it was understandable that it didn't have me in a panic. Well, not that much of a panic. Never even crossed my mind, I finally said to her. This was meant to be. Our friendship and journey was fated by the gods. I blew her a kiss, and when she was distracted by my sappy face, I reached out and snatched up the container of purple gadgeberries she'd picked in the 4th ring. There were only 6 left, so she was being stingy with her sharing. She glared as I popped the first tart bite of goodness into my mouth. Berries didn't grow in the 7th ring, but we occasionally got some in trade. Emmy leaned across, but before things escalated into a girl fight, the cart slowed, and our attentions were diverted to a huge fence across our current path. just to the side of the Minotaur's building. Standing spread out across the front of the tall barrier were six souls. I assumed they were souls because they had the same dazzling thing going on, not to mention that one appeared to be holding a naked flame in his palm, and as far as I could tell, he wasn't in excruciating, screaming pain as his hand burnt down to a stub. Dwellers were great at lots of things, toiling from sunup to sundown, turning three figs into a pie for the entire village, and even dancing around a fire after copious amounts of liquor. But one thing we could not do was control the elements. Gifts of the souls. Lucky bastards. Jareth pulled the Bolson to a complete halt and got off the cart. He crossed to the closest soul, a female who stood a foot taller than me, had better hair than me, and was altogether much more beautiful and intimidating than me. Not that I was comparing. Words were exchanged, words we couldn't hear, and then Jareth handed over some papers. "Why are those souls eyeballing us?" I asked Emmy, trying not to move my mouth too much. "Standard security checks before entering Blesswood." She spoke normally, so my stealthy whispers were clearly not required. They spent a few clicks examining our cart, checking the back sleeping area and zapping me with sparks of energy which seemed to emit from their bodies as they crossed close by. Eventually, we were cleared to enter, and I found myself sneakily popping gadgetberries in one by one as the gates opened. I had to do something to stem the rising tide of nerves which were threatening to erupt from me. Emmy had given up trying to get her snacks back, instead placing a hand on my knee to stop me bouncing it right out of the cart. The gates took at least 85 life cycles to open. By the time they did, I was over the nerves. Dragging things out helped no one. Bad power play, souls. Bad power play. The Bolson seemed hesitant to cross the final threshold of Soldel into Blesswood. Jareth had to be extra convincing, his belts flying through the air as he encouraged them along. The souls continued to watch us as we wheeled past. None of them smiled or said anything, but I could feel their judgment. "You shouldn't be here. You don't belong here. You're not one of us." The gate closed behind us, and suddenly the nerves were back. I twisted my hands in my lap as I tried to take in everything on this side of the barrier. We were still at the very top of the hill we'd climbed, and now it seemed it was time to start descending. To the right of our path was a long waterfall, which trickled down into the valley we were heading for. Yes, you heard that right. Water just trickling out in the open for all to see. And everything was green. The land was covered in a vibrant carpet of grass, which was almost too bright to stare at directly. The cart picked up speed, and with a rapid warning from Jareth, Emmy and I had to hold on tight to the rails beside us. After a brief dip, the land leveled out, and despite my need to appear unfazed, there might have been a loud gasp slippage. Either that, or the air was thin here, and I was having to work harder to breathe. I knew Blesswood was the very center of the Nine Rings, and that there were multiple villages in each ring. Those were the things I knew. What I hadn't known was that Blesswood was pretty much an island. An island? The very concept was like a myth wrapped in a fable shot through with some sparkling magic. Ever since the great rivers and lakes had dried up, since the outer rings of Manatsol had turned into the land of dust and despair, we had no true islands. But Blesswood was doing its very best to come close.
"We'll need to cross on the barges now," Jareth said, halting his cart next to a bunch of other carts.
There were other carts. I'd been so caught up in the visage of the center ring, the mass of land which went further than the eye could see and which seemed to be surrounded by a body of water that was connected to a series of waterfalls, like the ones we had passed moments before, that I'd failed to notice the other carts, just like ours, all lined up in rows beside us. It looked as though all the recruits from the Nine Rings were converging there. They were all waiting for this barge thing to take us across the water.
"What's a barge?" I asked Demi.
We were both off now, trying to balance on our half-dead legs. We were being punished for too many sun cycles of too little use.
"I have no idea," she answered, as Jareth handed us both our bags.
Emmy frowned down at mine, and I knew she was still trying to figure out how I got the pans and rock salt in there, plus enough changes of clothing for a week. If she was so worried about it, she should have packed for me. It was her own fault.
"Wait a moment." You have no idea what a barge is? I asked, astounded. You know everything. I don't even bother trying to learn stuff myself. I just ask you and you give me the answer.
Yeah, that's probably going to have to change, she advised, a laugh riding her words. But I've never read about barges, and nobody has ever mentioned them to me.
Wow, guess you're not all that smart after all. Guess you're kind of silly. You feel silly right now, don't you? You feel a little embarrassed because you don't know what a barge is?
No,
she smirked, grabbing my arm and pulling me after Jareth. She'd gotten into the habit of dragging me everywhere since they announced our names at the selection ceremony. She probably thought that I'd have a panic attack, steal a bolson, and hightail it as far away from Blesswood as possible at any moment. The thought hadn't even crossed my mind, but I didn't tell her that. It was too funny to watch her watching me out of the corner of her eye all the time. We reached the first group of dwellers, all stuck together in groups of two. I wasn't sure how many dweller settlements there actually were in Manatzel. Emmy had told me once, but I'd forgotten. Either way, the number of dwellers gathered to the edge of the platform rising over the water hinted at a substantial dweller population. We all turned as one unit at the sound carrying over the water, like a horn, but long and drawn out. There was a massive floating platform coming toward us, moving over the water.
Ah!
I jumped back, grabbing Emmy's arm. What the hell is that?
The barge,
Jareth answered for her, folding his arms and grinning at the thing as it approached us. Many of the dwellers closest to it jumped back, scattering away from the edges. Someone pushed me, another landed an elbow in my gut. Everyone was now scrambling back, trying to get away from the barge. Jareth was striding forward, so Emmy grabbed my arm and started dragging me again. I could make out people on the barge now. Two of them were maneuvering something down, snapping it against the edge of solid ground, forming a bridge over the water, leading from us to them.
Come on,
Jareth encouraged, moving toward the bridge. I could see many other dweller guides doing the same thing, encouraging the rest of the gathered dwellers to cross onto the floating platform. As soon as I stepped onto it, I let out a pitiful squeak. I could feel the water moving beneath, rocking me gently back and forth. It was terrifying, until I noticed Emmy laughing, and then I quickly convinced myself that it wasn't scary at all, because I didn't want to look like a wimp. We moved to the side, allowing the wimpy dwellers to push us closer and closer to the water in their bid to all stand in the center of the barge. I sat down on the edge, Emmy beside me, Jareth standing behind us. Our bags were piled together in a bunch of other bags, and I kept an eye on them because I was not losing those pots. I didn't care what Emmy said. They were important. Between watching my stuff, I studied the barge and everything else to do with this water marvel. The platform was too thick for our feet to touch the water, but I could feel the spray. It was cool and sharp, all at once. We watched as the island drew near, displaying a patchwork array of waterfront houses, along with giant, colorful stone buildings and imposing sky reachers. A very strange kind of building sat in the center of it all, making it the center of the world itself. It was raised up, on a hill, with a giant stone wall creeping all around the valleys of the small mountain beneath, gradually enclosing the very tip where the strange building sat.
What's that?
I asked, pointing. I wasn't asking Emmy or Jareth in particular, just whoever answered me first.
Blesswood Academy.
Emmy was the one to answer, her eyes bright, her cheeks flushed.
It's exactly how they described it.
The Academy grounds contain more than just the Academy itself,
Jareth added, watching the peak with us.
The Temple of the Creator is inside those walls, and the Sacred Sand Arena.
We stood as the barge slowed. I grabbed my bag before anyone else could think of touching it. The large water vessel eventually came to a standstill, and we moved with the rest of the dwellers hurrying to get their feet on solid ground again. They herded us toward a path carved into the side of the small mountain, and we climbed right to another set of gates. Two more souls stood guard, just as they had at the entrance to Blesswood. I looked up to the top of the wall and caught another soul face, briefly appearing over the edge.
This everyone?
One of the guards grunted at Jareth. We had managed to draw to the front of the long procession during our walk-up, but it wasn't because we were particularly braver or stronger or faster than the other dwellers.
It was because Emmy was particularly braver, stronger, and faster than the other dwellers, and she had been dragging me again. She was standing there now, not a single wrinkle in her expression as she brought